Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Liverpool in crisis. After Wednesday brought the most painful royal experience since Prince Albert had that piercing done, has Rafa hit rock bottom, or is there worse to come for the Reds this weekend at Stoke? Elsewhere, Patrick Vieira, David James, Sol Campbell. We profile the rash of raw and exciting young talent flooding the Premier transfer market. And get the latest from football's most caring tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations. There's your post. Plus, why are they called the Glazers? Because they bring a pain where before there was none and charge you for it. We get the horror details of Man United's financial mess. All of that in Football Weekly Extra. Right, welcome on board, everybody. Joining us today, Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Lovely to see you. And big welcome back to Rob Smythe.
James, how are you?
I'm very well. We established that earlier. But how are you, more to the point?
I'm quite well, too.
Great.
You never asked me how I was.
Sean, how are you?
I'm more frazzled than a bacon crisp that's been let to sit in a deep fat fryer for
Moving on now, Sean. Rob, there was some good news this week for Man United.
There was?
Liverpool dumped out of the FA Cup by Championship strugglers Reading. How about this? Well done, first of all, to Reading, fourth from bottom in football second tier under the caretaker stewardship of Brian McDermott. You did the minute by minute, and there were plenty of minutes, Barry, for this game. Give us your impressions.
I thought Reading were well worth their win. They're 21st in the Championship. I'm not sure how, because on the evidence of that performance, they should be up near the top. Perhaps it's a case that Liverpool are so bad, they just made them look much better than they are. I don't know. But Reading have some good players. Brynjar Gunnarsson. They have a trio of Icelandic players who did very well. Brynjar Gunnarsson, Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's possibly got the best delivery of a dead ball I've seen in a long time. Corners, free kicks and that. And who's the... Ivar Ingemarsson is the third one.
What about your man who almost scored the most amazing goal of the century?
Joby McAnuff was brilliant. He was man of the match in the first game and was inches away from scoring one of the greatest goals I've ever seen last night. He picked up the ball in the halfway line, I think turned four or five defenders inside out, drew Cavalieri out of the Liverpool goal and then just side-footed it past him and it went rolled agonisingly wide of the far post. And even in his post-match interview, you could see, despite their win, he was really upset that he hadn't scored the goal.
Was that thin line between clever and stupid? Rob Smythe, it would have been an effort that I think would have even graced any future Joy of Six solo goals, which you did an excellent Joy of Six the other day.
That was my first thought. Yeah, well, yeah. The funny thing is it was actually a terrible miss because he did everything right, got through, waited for the keeper to sit down, then you think just lift it over him, and then he passed it wide. So, you know, a nice run, shame about the finish.
Mm. Now, Liverpool, team's just not scared of them anymore, even at Anfield. Sean, I've got a little note here. They've tasted defeat more often than a man eating a millipede. That's one from the vaults there. But let's have a look at this. They have lost 12 games in all competitions this season. They only won 13. But crucially, a lot of those have been must-win games. You know, classically, the matches where Gerrard, etc., would rally round and pull the fat out of, quite literally, the fire. But, you know, they've blown things against Lyon, Fiorentina, Arsenal and now the Royals. And you have to wonder what's next. Is it going to get worse? Have they hit rock bottom? Or is Stoke going to be the latest nadir?
Well, 12 months ago, before the Stoke game, Benitez had his famous rant against Ferguson. And since then, I know they sort of matched United for a little bit in the title race. But since then, they have slipped and slipped. We've said it many times on this pod that having Lucas and Mascherano in the central midfield provides as much creativity as a Hoxton art director that's run out of cocaine, to quote Barry Glendinning's line, which he fed me earlier, so to speak. And also, Aquilani seems to be a terrible mistake. Gerrard hasn't played as well this season.
He does look pretty woeful, doesn't he, Alberto Aquilani?
It was weird last night, actually, because he did some things well, but I was reading back
tie
over my minute-by-minute report, and while he was on the ball a lot, you know, he took free kicks but drove them into the wall. He had some good passes. I think he was playing a bit too deep because he gave the ball away for the second goal, so... it was largely his fault.
It's a positional problem. He's out on the field, I think.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's too early to write him off, but I think he should be playing a bit further forward.
I agree with that. He's clearly quite an accomplished footballer, but the problem is A, he's not surrounded by accomplished footballers when Gerald and Torres are off the pitch, so he can't play little give and goes. But more importantly, Benitez, as we know, loves his two deep central midfielders. Now, Aquilani doesn't really fit that. The problem then is that the position further forward is ostensibly taken by Gerrard. Where does Aquilani fit in? It seems a really odd signing in that respect.
Well,
I don't think he's a bad player at all.
No, but trying to fit into a team that seems to be rapidly falling apart, never an easy thing for a young man who's been injured a lot.
I was going
to
say...
Rob, just a quick note for Mowgli84, a great, very astute post. He says, watching Roma the other night against Triestina, David Pizarro looks more like the Roma midfielder Liverpool should have brought, and that's a great shout actually, because he's a deep lie midfielder with an excellent range of passing and a lovely touch on the ball as well, the Chilean.
Well, that's what they lost, a deep lying playmaker, and that's what they needed. I was just going to say that it's sad that in this day and age, when a big team goes out of the FA Cup, we focus more on them than the winners. 20 years ago, we would celebrate Reading, celebrate Leeds. I don't think they've got anywhere near the credit they deserve for not just winning, but for the way they won, kind of going to these big stadiums, attacking from the start, playing football. And you read the paper next day and it's all Benitez in crisis, United in crisis. It's a bit of a shame, really, I think.
It is a shame, but they were tactically outwitted by a side that's struggling in the Championship with a caretaker manager. Reading just decided we'll hoof the ball up into the corner and someone can chase it, take it inside or around in Sua and then cross it in. And they created like four or five good scoring chances that way and put away two of them, which was enough. And to be fair to Liverpool, which is a sentence I don't say very often, they should have had a penalty when Aquilani was sort of held down in the box and Yossi Benyoun had a very good scoring opportunity, which he made a pig's ear of. So, but I think Reading... it would be very unfair to say they weren't worth the win.
Mm. All right. Well, credit then to the likes of Reading and Leeds. And we'll be sure on Monday to give plenty of credit to Stoke after they hammer Liverpool at the Britannia.
The question is whether Benitez will still be around to see there.
Really?
Well, I mean, I think the thing in Benitez's favour is that, you know, he's just recently signed a 5-year contract, which means Liverpool... would suppose they have to pay him $20 million to see him off. Mm. But the bookmakers have already opened a mark on who will replace Benitez with Kenny Dalglish and Jos Hiddink. And
Jos Hiddink, who's now freed from his Russia contract.
Absolutely.
And was sighted in a restaurant at the foot of the hills just outside Turin this week, because, of course, he's been heavily linked with Juventus. But there are a lot of doubts about that story. Well, that is always the question, the $20 million. But then a lot of people now, and Liam Agger tweeting in saying, given the amount of revenue lost with Benitez in charge, is sacking him now finally a genuine possibility? I.e., it will cost them even more to keep him.
I'm sure they could come to accommodation where they might pay, you know, some of that off,
right,
and he would go. But we'll have to wait and see what happens.
All right, Stoke, anyway, then, who might be unveiling David James for this game. How exciting is that?
I thought that was very strange when I heard it this morning, because Thomas Sorensen's been playing very well for Stoke. He's, you know, notorious as a penalty-saving specialist. He hasn't done anything wrong. And if I was him, I'd be most unimpressed to hear that David James is on the way. James is obviously moving to Stoke because he wants to enhance his chances of being England number one, and to do that he's going to have to be in the team, which means Sorensen won't be in the team, so one of them is going to end up with the hump. Sorry, just one more thing. Can I deliver? I have an interesting stat.
Okay.
Liverpool have lost 10 of their last 20 games. Bolton have lost 7. Liverpool have won 6 of their last 20. Bolton have won 7. And Liverpool have drawn 4, Bolton have drawn 6. Gary Megson got sacked, and Rafa Benitez is still in a job. So it's just kind of interesting, I think.
Hmm. That's a very interesting stat, Barry.
Thank you.
Well done. We mentioned hot young names lighting up the transfer market like David James, and of course another one's that man, Sol Campbell, who wandered out of the Arsenal changing room at half-time and at the match against West Ham back in 2006. 4 years on, he wanders back in again, just in time for their trip to Bolton.
It's an interesting one because Arsene Wenger isn't used to signing people over 30. Campbell is 35. It suggests to me that Wenger knows that Arsenal need more leaders. They need more men. That, you know, when the going gets tough in the next 3 weeks, that can stir up the dressing room. I don't know how much he'll play. I was chatting to some Portsmouth fans of mine earlier who said that he had no pace whatsoever last season, and it's a big ask that Campbell can come back to be anywhere near as he was. But if Gallagher gets an injury, would you prefer to have Campbell or Silvestre or Senderos in your team? Probably Campbell. So you can sort of see the logic.
Mm. All right. Well, of course, Bolton have their own debutante, and I refer to Owen Coyle, who made that controversial jumping of ship from Burnley to take over from Gary Megson. And presumably it's a bit early to see any effects of this.
Well, not necessarily, because sometimes a team lose a manager, get a new one in, and they, you know, play better on the back of it. And I'd say Arsenal fans would be quite nervous about this one, whereas if Megson was still in charge, they probably wouldn't. So I wouldn't entirely rule out Bolton getting a result or possibly even a win.
What's interesting is the stylistic change. I can't remember a manager going to a club with ideas that are so different to where they used to play. Bolton were fairly direct. Excuse me. Burnley would play some really nice stuff. I know Wenger was a fan of them. So how he imposes that style on a fairly kind of muscular, limited group of players will be interesting to see. I think that's a really hard thing for him.
Hmm. I think Wenger's arrival at Arsenal potentially... Talking about a clash of football and culture.
Yeah, to an extent, but he still had good players like Merson, Bergkamp when he got there.
Somebody posting in this week, it might have been somebody called H, or if it isn't, and there was more
it's
to
not
that name.
From Steps, is he?
Possibly. But anyway, saying it's hard to believe that Campbell has reached 35 years of age and has had such a successful career without once commanding a transfer fee. Is that true? He's never, ever.
Yeah.
He's always moved on a free.
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinary. Now, mentioned the FA Cup third round replay back at the start, and should add that Reading will be getting a game with Burnley late of Owen Coyle's, you know. And we'll be talking more about Burnley actually in part three. Meantime, there was another game from the third round replayed this week, and of course, Newcastle, in front of only 16,000 fans, had a fine victory over who was it? Was it Plymouth, no?
Yes.
Yeah. And a hat trick from Peter Lohenkranz, and that's now 13 games unbeaten. Well done. To them.
Well done also to the Plymouth fans who made the 819.2-mile round trip to go and watch their team get hammered. They deserve medals, I think.
Mm, indeed. That's it for part one, though. In a couple of seconds, we'll be turning our attention to the Africa Cup of Nations.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Right, part two, Africa. Just another poster. Indeed, posting this week. So last week, Barry, he says, thinks South Africa is an island somewhere off the African coast. This week, he's dropping words like exclave this and cabinda that. Has Jimbo been providing the geography lessons, Barry?
No, you haven't.
I haven't, have I?
I've been improving myself.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Now, Jonathan Wilson is our man on the ground, quite literally in Angola. He joins us now on the line. Jonathan.
James, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you doing in the somewhat grueling conditions there?
It's very, very hot. I'm in a nice air-conditioned hotel waiting for a taxi, actually, so it's not that bad.
Excellent. Are you eating properly, Jonathan?
I find it hard to eat when it's as hot as this, but one meal a day, it seems to be doing me well. A lot of bananas, a lot of fruit.
Okay.
A few biscuits.
Well, that's probably a good idea, in the warm climates and that. It's a bit like Brian Oliver predicted here on Football Weekly before the start of the tournament. None of the teams who qualify for this year's World Cup have won a game yet, and some very disappointing performances both from the big teams and indeed their big star players.
Absolutely. I've been really surprised by how bad Algeria were. I mean, they were well beaten by Malawi 3-0, and yeah, Malawi were one of the two, along with Mozambique, one of the two big outsiders for the tournament. All kinds of rumours of discontent between their coach, Travis Sudan, and the squad. The week before the tournament, the head of the Football Federation flew to their training camp in France, and he claims they were sorting out bonuses, but there's all kinds of rumours he was trying to kind of broker a peace between the players and the manager. It's quite hard to understand where that sprung up from. And they had this great result in Sudan when they beat Egypt in that playoff, and you'd think they'd be, you know, all optimism and all kind of all excited about the World Cup. But the performance against Malawi on Monday was the performance of a team who really had kind of lost faith in the manager, who, you know, really flat, really sluggish. And then since then, you know, we've seen Cameroon lose yesterday, and we've seen Nigeria lose.
Yeah.
To go along with Ivory Coast draw against Burkina Faso.
Now, Nigeria taken apart really by Egypt, who are the one team, would you say, who so far really look like the business?
Absolutely. I mean, we said this in Ghana. We thought that Egypt might be a little bit over the hill. They've come here without Mohamed Abitrika, who in the last few years has been their most creative player, their real kind of the fulcrum of their attack. Zaki's not here either, so we wonder if they lack a bit of muscle up front. And yet, as they did 2 years ago when they beat Cameroon 4-2 in the first game, they started fantastically.
Ghana, on Friday, the big game, their debut in the tournament, or their first game in this tournament anyway, they're going to be taking on Ivory Coast. And how do you see that one going?
Well, it's a huge game. It becomes a bigger game because of being a three-team group. That really some of the slack has been taken out of the group. And Ivory Coast not winning against Burkina Faso, they really have to win tomorrow in Cabinda. Because if they don't, it means that Ghana and Burkina, when they play next Tuesday, they can effectively arrange a result that would see both of them through. Now, I'm not suggesting they necessarily go into each other's dressing rooms before the game and say, you know, it'd be quite handy if they finished 2-2 or whatever. But I am suggesting that if, with, say, 20, 25 minutes to go, they have a score that's, you know, mutually beneficial, neither side would see much reason to try and change that. And, from Ghana's point of view, you take out one of their big rivals for the to win the title.
Hmm. Jonathan, enjoy yourself then, and look forward to catching
you. Don't worry.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, Jonathan. I must admit, I'm still having a little bit of difficulty with the Africa Cup of Nations after they disqualified Togo. It does seem incredibly indelicate the way they've handled this. And indeed insensitive as well. Togo, you probably know, well, obviously there was the shooting. Five members of their party shot, three of them fatally. And a lot of stories about how one of them, a friend of Adebayo's, died in his arms on the team bus. And the president withdrew the team for a three-day period of mourning. And then I think either unofficially or officially applied to come back and catch up on the one game that they would have missed. And the organisers said no and disqualified them for not turning up to
it. And it was the language as well. There wasn't any sort of compassion or sympathy.
Especially because this is a tournament that Angola have invited countries from all over Africa to come. What happens even before it starts? Players and squad members from one of these countries get shot by terrorists. And there doesn't seem to be any... A bit as Jonathan hinted, you know, they've had a civil war going on for decades. And so that's the way it is. There doesn't seem to be any notion of the fact... even embarrassment.
Do you remember when Middlesbrough didn't turn up for a game at Blackburn because they had all these players injured? They were treated basically like Togo are. But, I mean, the circumstances are so different. I think it's pathetic the way they've been treated.
But it's crass and insensitive and pretty disgusting. But they're football administrators. And would you expect anything better?
Crowd's not big as well. I was going to ask something about that.
No, some of the stadia have been as good as empty for games.
The crowd's not big, but the Mozambique keeper is. I don't know if you've seen this extraordinary... His attempted somersault. Very painful. All right, good. That's enough on the Africa Cup of Nations. In Spain, Barcelona got knocked out of the Copa del Rey. Sean, you're very excited about this. By Sevilla.
Barcelona had a decent team out and...
And they are out now.
They are at
lost. They're the strongest team.
They had Messi, they had Ibrahimovic, Xavi as well.
Sid will be back with us on Monday. We're just whizzing through other continental news. Italy, Juve survived their cup clash with Napoli, handing thus Sir Walter Mazzarri, who's done brilliantly with the Partenopeans since arriving there, his first defeat. But it's fair to say they put out the reserves team, Napoli. Anyway, it was a big game because everyone was saying Ciro Ferrara is going to go. Gus Hiddink's been cited at a restaurant down the road from the thing, and that he's agreed terms with Juve. We'll see what happens because the club is saying that no, we're staying with Ferrara, etc., etc. I was just going to say, did you know that Serie A, in the course of half a season, have already fired 12 managers? Woof! The latest being Antonio Conte, who got the bullet at Atlanta, and Muti coming in to take his place. Other posts and messages. Badger General says, to my knowledge, there's never been a mention on the pod of Preston North End FC. Why is this? He kind of says, our last competitive game was a 7-0 thrashing, plus we've installed one of the most exciting young managers in the country, and a Ferguson to boot, at the helm. Very impressive record, reaching and failing in playoffs, blah, 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 blah. Other trivia. First winners of the league, Preston are one of three teams in the league allowed to wear their home kit at all times, although they never do, as you make more money from having change kits. There you go. Preston North End, everybody.
Well, they got mentioned quite a lot in the media recently for sacking their manager,
yes,
who was doing very well.
I don't know that we actually
them.
Covered that much, did we?
I don't think we did, no. Our horse racing Tony Paley's a Preston North End fan, and he was given out to me recently for just the general lack of Preston North End coverage in the media in general, as if it was all my fault.
Right.
I don't decide these things.
You're not in charge of that shadowy anti-Preston North End cabal.
Not sure who is. There's so many of these.
I think it's the Lizards.
So many of these anti whoever insert team name.
It's hard to keep up, isn't it? We get daily memos basically about who to.
This is who we are against today. Yeah. Scunthorpe.
Right, Manchester United. M. Meister has an interesting theory on Wayne Rooney. He says that basically Fergie's tamed Rooney too much, bit like Jack Nicholson in the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He's taken the... No?
Nah.
All right.
He's a different player to the one he looked at Euro 2004, but I think that's just part of growing up. Look at Giggs, other players. No player is the same at 24 as they were at 18, really. Look at Ronaldo, even. I just think
he's
it's
better.
Part of...
Exactly. Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, but he's a different type of player.
Right.
I just think it's part of growing up as a footballer, really.
Most players get more and more mature, whereas Ronaldo seems to be going the other way. The older he gets, the bigger an idiot he is.
Yeah, exactly. More mature as a footballer, more of an idiot as a person.
Right. Corleone, with regards to Berbatov, are we allowed to say that Juan de Ramos and Martinez were far better than Lord Fergie at getting the best out of him?
You could do a whole pot on Berbatov.
Are you a yay or a nay on Berbatov?
I'm still somewhere in the middle. I'm slowly running out of patience, but... I think it's far too simplistic to say that he's been mismanaged or that he was better managed at Spurs.
Right.
There are so many things that go into that.
Now, we'll be talking about Man United and their lack of wherewithal on the transfer market and elsewhere very, very shortly with top journo David Conn.
Football Weekly from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.
It's the weekend. And that means Man United against Burnley, the big clash of the clubs in crisis. This week saw papers filled with the eyebrow-raising news that the Glazers, quite apart from saddling £700 million worth of debt on a previously profitable club, actually paid themselves for doing it. And they now have a mechanism in place to siphon further funds out. Good Lord, people posting in like LaGaffe saying, as a United fan, should I genuinely be worried? Let's get some answers, by calling David Conn. David, hello.
Hello there.
Hello. Should LaGaffe be worried, David?
What we've got to be careful about doing is not being doom and gloom. They're all going to they're going to collapse tomorrow. They are Manchester United. They make massive money. They issued their accounts for 2008 to 2009 at the same time as this horrible 300-page document which said the Glazers are trying to borrow another £500 million. And as you say, by the way, they've taken out themselves £22-23 million. So should he be worried? Yes, because it's a horrible situation that here you have the proud, the great, the glorious Manchester United. And these guys who nobody wanted, who had the most vociferous and the best informed and the most... populous, if you like, the most people involved supporters campaign ever in English football, really a celebrated campaign that those people should be proud of, who predicted what was going to happen. These guys came in and they loaded the club with the debts that they themselves borrowed to take it over in the first place. And because of the horrendous interest and the way in which they did it, the amount that United owe has actually vastly increased in those 4.5 years. On top of huge interest they've paid and huge fees they've paid out to bankers and lawyers, which is actually £120 million to orchestrate all this, a takeover that nobody ever wanted and that has only brought a draining of money to United. Financial situation is a lot worse than Alex Ferguson was trying to make out it was. He has not got the Ronaldo money to spend, that's definite. And because there'll be increasing ticket prices and all the rest of it. Right? But even United themselves in this document agree that if they don't keep being successful at pretty much the present rate, then they will have serious problems. And they themselves have notified, have very publicly stated that the big football worry that they've got, which is... Sir Alex finally heading off into the horizon sometime soon.
David, you say no one wanted this, but certainly the people that profited from the Glazers coming in did, the shareholders. Ferguson at the time, to the ire of many Manchester United fans, wasn't particularly vocal about the problems they would bring. Surely they have to bear some responsibility for all this.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I say nobody wanted, and by that I mean... you could hardly find one supporter of Manchester United that wanted these guys to take over. And I think the Manchester United Supporters Trust got 32,000 fans signing up to oppose it, which is absolutely unbelievable. Anyone who's been to a public meeting of a Supporters Trust with 17 people there knows how amazing that is. But yes, of course, they did buy from people at a very, very high price. And we remember the Irish racehorse owners, Magnier McManus. They owned, I think, 30% or just about at the time. There were other people who'd come in purely as investors to buy Man United shares. There were pension funds and this and that, and people who just wanted to make money out of it. And, you know, people are always saying, well, Manchester United was a PLC, it was on the open market, and the Glazers came in and paid a ridiculous price. So they bought it, and that is true. Ferguson has always had a really odd attitude to them, hasn't he? He's always really backed them up. He's always said they're absolutely great to deal with. He's always, and then last week he actually said that the financial position is of no concern at all, he actually said, and that he has got the Ronaldo money to spend if he wants
it. But you're saying he definitely doesn't, David?
He definitely does not have the Ronaldo money to spend, and that is there in black and white. They're taking 70 million out of the club to pay these hedge fund debts off. But remember, that's only happening if they get this bond thing that they're selling at the moment, if they get that away. If they don't, they can't pay off the debt, and it all just stays stagnant. Whether Sir Alex is trying to put the bravest face on it or genuinely believes these are great guys who haven't done anything to damage the club, that money is not available to him to spend.
My word. David, thank you very much for that sobering look inside the murky world of Man United's finances.
I hate being the sobering one. I must come in with a beer next time.
Nice. Right. We'll ask you about some plucky young teams, balanced books or something next time.
Plucky young things would be great. Yeah. Okay, lovely. Guys.
Thanks, David.
Cheers, David.
Cheers, bye.
Rob, so...
That's cheered me up.
That's cheered you up. If they don't win the league and do well in Europe... It's curtains.
Well, everyone knows it's been built on a house of cards, and they have problems because, as David said, they needed this exceptional achievement just to sustain it. And they're not going to, I mean, realistically, they're not going to win the league this year. And then if, as is suspected, they sell probably Vidic in the summer, that weakens them further. Maybe the year after, they have to sell another
Giggs maybe
asset.
Will be...
well, exactly.
Skulls.
And then suddenly, not only is there a problem on the pitch... But then they don't have many assets to sell. If we work on the assumption, as he said, Ronaldo was exceptional, but they probably tried to sell Vidic for 20 million this summer and then someone for maybe 30 the year after. But who? Apart from Rooney, who real assets? Evra, maybe. I mean, this isn't... It's new because of the bond thing, but really it's slightly surprising that this has just come up now because it's always kind of been there. Everyone knew, really, that there were no happy endings with the Glazers, and now we're kind of seeing it.
I mean, the Glazers weren't the type that, you know, watched Duncan Edwards and Bobby Charlton and their youth, you know, their only interest in Manchester United, you know, was to make money. And I mean, a lot of United fans did stand and protest, but a lot of people that joined FC United were abused by other United fans.
Well, even
so.
Even Ferguson though has been incredibly disdainful towards FC United, which has left a really bitter taste. So it's not just, you can kind of excuse some fans on the grounds that some fans are quite stupid, but Ferguson should know better. But he probably is in many ways the not the biggest villain, because of course that's the Glazers, but I agree with you that he kind of is as important in this as they are.
A lot of the posters on our sport blog, there's been a lot of articles about this appearing on the sport blog, and a lot of them are hugely in denial, and their heads are very much buried in the sand. They seem to think that as long as United are second in the league, still in the Champions League, everything is okay, and they can't see the wood for the trees.
The extraordinary thing is people are buying this laughable... assertion from Ferguson that he's looking for value in the market. This is a man who spent 30 million on Berbatov, who has always said that he has to pay kind of Man United tax. You have to pay more for players. It's just the way it is because it's Man United. This is the man who kind of almost quit because he wasn't getting money to buy big players before he spunked all that money on Varane. I mean, it's extraordinary. Do we really think that he's going to, in the twilight of his career, when he's one title away from kind of his ultimate achievement, that he's going to suddenly have a conscience, look around for value? It's completely nonsense. Mm. And if you believe that, then you'll pretty much believe anything.
Right, but many people do though. the supporting of a club, it's almost like the Stockholm syndrome, isn't it? You don't want to let go. And even when your club is abusing you, even when it's rogering you, in the place you don't want to be rogered, you just let it happen.
As opposed to all those places you do want to be rogered.
I find it naive that people think you can't criticise Ferguson, you can't criticise Wenger because what they've done for their clubs. I think that's ridiculous.
But it's almost like throwing out 600, 700, 800 years of Enlightenment thought, or we mustn't criticise. Of course you criticise. Everything should be open to discussion.
I thought one of the most interesting posts I've ever read in this sport blog appeared under David Kahn's article yesterday. This guy, I can't remember his name, so I apologise if he's listening, but he could trace all this Manchester United's current financial woes back to Alex Ferguson's naked greed over the racehorse, Rock of Gibraltar, that he was gifted by the Irish shareholders in Manchester United, JP McManus, Dermot Desmond and whoever else. And they gave him this horse, and then he wanted stud fees and all this, really taking the mickey, And whoever posted the comment said, if he hadn't abused their generosity in the way he did, and it was outrageous what he tried to do, would they have been as quick to sell their 30%? If they hadn't, then Manchester United probably wouldn't be in this mess now.
Indeed so, the mess they are in, and this weekend sees them host Burnley. Now with added Brian Laws. How about that, eh? I think it was Paul Wilson suggesting that it was kind of goodbye Cinderella story and hello pumpkin for Burnley with their change on the bench there. Of course, best known for throwing the, as you pointed
chicken
out,
wings
the
fire at Ivan Urbanetti.
Fracturing his cheekbone. Mm. Pretty shocking story, anyway.
What's shocking about it is that in 1996... the post-match snacks at Kenilworth Road were chicken wings. So they're a long way from that now. I'd say you'd be lucky to get a bag of crisps.
Right.
Didn't Burnley say that one of the main reasons they appointed him was some
Deloitte and Touche study confirming he was top of the list of championship managers over the period 2006-2009 in terms of delivering the best results, here's the crucial bit, relative to financial budgets.
That's terrifying.
Well, I looked, I mean, his win percentage record is 36.7% in his managerial career, which Ian Dowers is 39%.
Yeah, but it's points per pound. That's what they're saying. You've got to look at the budget of the club.
That's an extraordinary thing to look at.
Well, not if you're Burnley and you're unbelievably focused on not going into
surely you can't judge points per pound. That's just ridiculous.
And also, nine matches in a row, they didn't.
Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah,
That's the thing. He's just come from Sheffield Wednesday where he was fired just before Christmas as a result in the Championship, and as a result he gets a Premier League job.
Exactly. They hadn't won a game in nine matches. What also, in his press conference, he said, I've had an affinity with Burnley since I was 16. I had my wedding reception at the club and my daughter was born there. Who has their wedding reception?
Daughter was born at the club?
At Burnley.
Right.
Who?
Brian Laws.
Why not?
I don't know, but if you've got all that, all those thousands of pounds which you must have earned, surely you could have had it somewhere nicer than
If you've had an affinity. Perhaps, when the day comes and he finally shuffles off mortal coil, his ashes will be spread. Turf Moor, yeah. Yeah.
Top football knowledge, you
know. Other games on Saturday. Ooh, there's the latest challenge for Bourne leader John Terry. He'll be keeping the locker room together for a visit from Sunderland. You're Barry Gunn. I know you want to comment on that interview he gave.
What a preposterous buffoon that man is. He's possibly the only footballer who makes an even bigger fool of himself when he's talking on the record than he does when he's being subjected to an undercover sting. Even if what he says is true, and I doubt it, you don't say those things about yourself. You wait for someone else to praise you in that fashion.
He might be wasting on football. If he has these powers to bring men together, can we not look at him? It's a world peace or something.
Yeah, we should explain
this,
what he
this
said.
This man's a visionary.
He said...
He basically picked up his diamond-encrusted golden trumpet and played a very loud solo.
He said
on
that
it.
Basically he's been in charge of keeping things together. And he's had some help from Drogba and Frankie Lampard.
Behind the scenes, presumably when he's doing his
It's been tough years for Chelsea. He's had a lot to face as he keeps the club together, this kind of thing. He also revealed, and this was picked up a lot in the Italian press, that when he was just a wee lad in Chelsea training, that he shouted at Gianfranco Zola for misplacing a pass in a training game, as though this was some... early example of his kind of inherent toughness. But Gianfranco Zola being A, tiny, and B, one of the nicest, most unprepossessing people you could possibly...
Also, The fact that it was a misplaced pass is a bit rich coming from Terry, given him.
Well, I find it very difficult to believe that Gianfranco Zola misplaced a pass anyway, so I'd say that's a lie. But he's since that interview, he's come out and said that newspaper reports of his interview, which he gave on Chelsea TV, have been taken out of context, which is a classic footballer line.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has such form in the field of releasing truthful statements vis his statement denying he was ever thinking about going to Manchester City. He's a clown.
Right, there you go. Well, he'll be taking the field against Sunderland. Everton, meanwhile, against Man City. Now, since we last podded, Man City, of course, had that big 4-1 win Monday night over Blackburn. That's now five straight wins. They're up to fourth place. Not bad, Rob, for a small club with a small mentality.
Yeah, that's cheered me up. I think they've been really good since Mancini took over, and I think the wisdom of sacking Hughes was fine. The only thing is the way it was handled. But yeah, they look really good.
This is his first big test, would you say, against Everton?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, who have been playing very well of late without getting many wins.
Yeah, they've drawn 5 out of 6, I think.
But very honourable draws.
Mm. Absolutely. City now have a great record at Everton. I know they won last year, but I think in the Premier League, I think Everton have won and drawn most of the games. What interests me, Jim, but you might know more about this. Mancini's been saying to Corriere della Sport.
Oh, he wants to bring in pizza and red wine.
Yeah, he wants to, you know, you need more chicken, pizza, carbohydrates, as well
carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates, sorry, I can't speak.
That's all right.
As well as a glass of wine,
yes,
which isn't being served.
No, I can understand how that would worry him. Well, I'm not a sports nutritional thingamy, but you know, the glass of wine is quite a common thing in an Italian training camp, yeah. Pizza less so, I would venture. The pasta, yeah, but pizza takes me a little bit by surprise.
Yeah, I like the fact it's a high class drinking culture. When Joe Royle was there, he got kind of turfed out because they were all getting slaughtered on lager. Whereas Mancini, obviously, a nice drop of red wine.
But it speaks volumes that the English media is getting its knickers in a twist over the wine at the training ground. You know, I don't think he's suggesting that they drink two bottles each before they go out to run or, you know, stagger around cones.
Right.
But the English media obviously are sort of likening it to that. Oh, at Blackburn now, they'll be drinking 15 pints before each session.
Right.
Or at Arsenal, they'll go back to the old ways where they drink.
Yeah. The good old days. Rob, Tevez, 10 goals in 8 Premier League matches. Oof, United could do with him, eh?
Oh, if they had two things to rub together. Yeah, he's been fantastic. I think with Tevez, he's a rhythm player more than most.
Mm.
This is his first regular run of games for 18 months.
Right.
He's seeing the benefit. He looks really good.
Yeah. Portsmouth playing Birmingham Stoke, as we mentioned, are hosting Liverpool. Tottenham have Hull, Wolverhampton have Wigan, and Aston Villa are hosting West Ham. Can I just express my amazement at the stories that Massimo Cellini, who's the owner of Cagliari, Serie A team Cagliari, is now either among the favourites or possibly has already done the deal, according to one Italian website, to buy West Ham. This is absolutely shocking stuff. Cagliari have been one of the tightest clubs in terms of never spending a penny more than they have to, for years in Serie A. And Cellini's always been a bit of a joke because of his inability to give a manager more than a week to sort the team out. I have to say, though, that in the last couple of seasons, he has improved. He gave the job to untested former player, Allegri, who's done a brilliant job with them. And Cagliari are doing really, really well. But as for all this money's coming from, I don't know. Although, I suppose Man United just go to show that you don't actually need to have any money at all to buy a Premier League club. You can just load the debt on them. He has previously been convicted of both fraud and false accounting, Cellini, so he'll fit in nicely, among etc. And there you go. Either him or Tony Fernandez. Anyway, Aston Villa against West Ham. It's a big game, that, for West Ham, who are in all sorts of trouble.
Well, every game's big for West Ham at the moment, and ditto for Aston Villa. I would expect Aston Villa to win that game fairly comfortably, because West Ham just don't seem to be very good.
Mm.
That's just some more laser-sharp insight for you.
Indeed. Indeed so. Well, we'll have the verdict on that game and much, much more in Monday's exciting Football Weekly, but I think that's all for today. Many thanks, Barry, for being here with your analysis and interesting statistics and
very well.
Sean Ingle,
cheers, James.
Magical metaphors. And Rob Smythe, the raw passion you brought to the Man United debate.
Cheers,
I'm sure,
James.
No one will forget that easily. And producer Pete, many thanks to you, and speak to you on Monday, listeners. Bye-bye.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.